We find ourselves, as we know, once again in the midst of the 9 days, a time of year when we commemorate the wreckage and the devastating loss, the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash. There's a very meaningful mashal that is given to try to help us gain a little bit of an appreciation, a little bit of an understanding as to the serious perspective that we're supposed to have at this time of year. So the mashal, the story goes as follows. There was a family, there was a young couple who got married, and for whatever reason, they very much wanted to have children, but for whatever reason, they were not able to. And they were trying whatever it was, and many years had passed already, and they still were not able to conceive. They weren't able to have children, and they tried all kinds of different interventions. They went for all kinds of support and assistance and help, all the different organizations, but yet nothing was really working. Finally, after many, many years, they miraculously became pregnant, and they were very excited. There was great anticipation, a lot of excitement in the family. And they were looking forward to the day when this child would be born. And finally the day comes when the woman feels that she is in labor, she's ready to go to the hospital, and the couple is so excited, and they're a little bit nervous, a little bit anxious, but after all, they're really excited because this is what they've been anticipating, this is what they've been looking forward to for so many years. The husband is a little too nervous about the whole experience. He decides he's going to stand outside of the room, he doesn't want to see everything that's going on, opens up his tehillim, he starts to daven, and he's getting very into it, very carried away with his tefillah. But one thing that he does notice is that there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of commotion by the door of his wife's delivery room. And he sees the doors keep on opening and keep on closing. They keep on taking different machines in, different machines out. Doctors are running in and out. And he doesn't understand what's happening until finally a doctor comes over to him and he says, "Hamatzav ma'od misubach." There's a very complicated story going on inside with your wife. Don't ask. I can't get into the details. It's a highly problematic situation. And what we're left with right now is the following. I know that we will not be able to save both your wife and this child. Either it's going to be your wife, or it's going to be the child, but both of them are not going to come out alive. So you have to make the decision. And the husband is beside himself. How can he possibly make such a difficult decision? He says, "Look, we have to go discuss it with the patient herself. We have to discuss it with my wife. I can't make the decision for her. As much as I would want a child, I also want to keep my wife, and I don't know how to make this decision." So they go inside, and they discuss it with this woman, and she is absolutely hysterical, and she's going crazy. And finally she turns to the doctor and she says, "You know what, this is something that I have waited, it's something I dreamed about, it's something I anticipated for so many years, it's something that I always wanted. And now finally that I'm at that point in my life where I'm about to have all that I wished for, all that I dreamt about, now you're telling me that I'm going to have to go on with life without this dream, without this imagination, without this incredible anticipation that I looked so much forward to." So she says, "You may as well take my life because it's not worth living if I'm not going to have everything that I always wanted." So she makes that decision and she says, "Save the child, don't save my own life." Her and her husband are obviously having a very difficult conversation, and she turns to her husband and she says, "Before my life is lost, I want you to promise me that you're going to commit to take care of this child with love, with affection, with endearment, with incredible dedication, the same way as if you would have a mother, and make sure that you tell this child how much I literally sacrificed for him to be born and to be in this world. And make sure you remind him that it was either me or him. Make sure you remind him how much we anticipated, how much we were looking forward to him, and yet I was willing to give up my life just so that he should be able to have a successful life." The husband obviously promises his wife he's going to do whatever he can, and a delightful, beautiful, healthy Jewish boy is born, and everyone's all excited, but at the same time, the wife just lost her life. It's a very difficult situation. The next day, there's an overwhelming sense of devastation because on the one hand, everybody shows up to the Levaya, but at the same time, they just had a baby. It's such a tragedy, such a sad situation, but that's what it is. And the kid grows up and the father is raising him, always telling him these stories about his mother, and he's reminding the child about how much the mother sacrificed, and don't ever forget. Finally, it comes time for the child's bar mitzvah. And this is a really beautiful mashal because here is where it really should hit home. We come to the child's bar mitzvah, and the father tells the child, "Well, tonight is going to be your bar mitzvah. We're going to have a big hall, a big banquet. We're putting together a big party, a big celebration. It's very exciting. But tonight is also the yahrzeit of your mother. And it's the first time that you're able to say Kaddish as somebody who's obligated to say Kaddish. So tonight, the first thing you're going to do as a bar mitzvah is you're going to daven for the Amud. Make sure after davening, when you say the Kaddish, make sure that you say it carefully. Make sure you say it slowly as an Ilui Neshama. Say it with passion. Say it with warmth. Say it with some feeling in order that we should have an Ilui Neshama for your mother who gave up, after all, so much for you to be in this world and to grow up and be a bar mitzvah boy, to be an adult." So the child comes like any other child would. He shows up to the bar mitzvah, gets up to daven for the yamid, and he's swallowing up all the words of Kaddish, and he's not paying attention at all. And the father's ready to faint. The father's beside himself. How could it be? After all your mother gave up for you, after all these stories that I've told you about your mother and how much she cared about you, how much she wanted you, and how much we wanted to have you, how much we gave up in our own lives to have you, this is the way you respond. The one time you're able to show some gratitude, some dedication to your mother, this is the way you respond. And the child turns to his father and he says, "What do you want from me? My mother doesn't mean anything to me. All I know about my mother is the fact that she lays in a cemetery somewhere, that there's a plot that has her name on it, but it doesn't really have any connection, doesn't mean anything to me." And this is the mashal that's given about what our feelings are supposed to be in the times of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, in a time when we commemorate the Churban Beis HaMikdash. We all know that the Medrash says, we mentioned it last week, Shafach HaMaso Ala Eitzim Va'avanim, which means that the Ribbono Shel Olam, God really wanted that there should be a perfect unity in the world. We should have a Beis HaMikdash, we should have the Jewish people, everything should be great, He should be able to have a relationship with us. But it came to a time where it was an impossibility, and the doctors came into the room, so to speak, and said, it's either going to be me or you. Either the Jewish people are going to be destroyed, or something else is going to have to happen. And God decided, we're going to keep the Jewish people alive, we're going to keep the child alive, but I'm going to destroy my own house. I'm going to destroy myself. I'm going to take away my own life, so to speak. And that's how much He gave up, so to speak, in order that we should have a continuation of a legacy, that we should be able to continue on as a Jewish people. And once a year we have the chance to have a yahrzeit, once a chance to have a Tisha B'Av, which we all sit aside and we say, thank you for giving up your life. It's like the child who's supposed to say thank you to his mother for giving up her life in order to save his own life, in order that he should have a prosperous and successful life. And yet, so many of us get up and say the Kaddish the same way that child on his bar mitzvah, with such a callousness, with such an insensitivity. How often do we think about on a Tisha B'Av or during the 9 days? It's the one time of year when we can actually appreciate the chesed, the greatness of what God did for us, how much He spared us and how much He's invested in us, but yet we so often carelessly move on and with a callousness to memorialize this Beis HaMikdash and our relationship which has been severed, so to speak. So now is the time for us to really consider that and to think about what it means to have a Beis HaMikdash, what it means that God took away from Himself, so to speak, in order to save, in order to have a continuation of the Jewish people and to perpetuate the mission of what we're supposed to do. So at the same time that we know that this is, so to speak, the yahrzeit commemoration, that Tisha B'Av is supposed to be the time when we think about how much we've lost and how much has been sacrificed for us to be here, we also know that Tisha B'Av is referred to in the Psukim in Eicha as Kara Alai Moed. Tisha B'Av in some way is referred to as a Yom Tov. And that's a very difficult kind of balance to make. How do we, on the one hand, observe a yahrzeit of the Beis HaMikdash? How do we observe the fact that we're in a state of churban, of desolation, of destruction? And yet at the same time, you call it also a moed, you call it a holiday, you call it a festival, it's a yom tov. How does that work? In fact, the Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Tisha B'Av that it's for this reason that we don't recite Tachanun on Tisha B'Av, because it has some sort of quasi-status of yom tov. Even though this is the saddest day of the year, but at the same time, Ein Olchin Al Pneim, we don't have Tachanun on this day because it's a joyous day of year. And similarly, the Shulchan Aruch says in a year like this year, when you have Shabbos either falls out, Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos, or Tisha B'Av is Matzah Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch writes that we don't say Tzidkascha by Mincha, Shabbos afternoon, because this is either a Yom Tov itself, or it's an anticipation of a Yom Tov, and therefore, we don't say Tzidkascha on a year like that. How far do we take this halacha? How far should we take it? If you say this is a real Yom Tov, it's a real bona fide Yom Tov, it's a holiday, so maybe we should take it to the extreme. So the Yaivitz, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, discusses, maybe we should say that an Avil, the same way doesn't daven for the Yaman on Chol HaMoed, maybe an Avil shouldn't daven for the Yaman on Tisha B'Av. After all, it's a Yom Tov. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden argues that, yeah, he thinks that's the proper minhag, that an Avil, the same way we wouldn't have an Avil daven on Rosh Chodesh, on Yom Tov, on Chanukah, on Purim, so too we don't have an Avil daven on Tisha B'Av. And Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach rejects this assumption. He says that he thinks it's unreasonable to assume such a thing. Yes, the Shulchan Aruch has certain things that we assume. Tisha B'Av is considered a Yom Tov with regard to those very particular and specific halachos, but in general we don't extend it so far to say that an Avil shouldn't be allowed to daven on Tisha B'Av. He says, after all, Hare Kulam Avelim B'Tisha B'Av. All of us are equal on Tisha B'Av. All of us are Avelim. So you can't say somebody who's in Avelis for, unfortunately, for a family member, you can't say that they have a different status and they shouldn't be allowed to daven because we're all in such a joyous mood on Tisha B'Av. Reb Shlomo Zalman thought that was a little too far to go. Reb Shlomo Zalman adds as well that many have the practice, many have the minhag, that when they go to the Makom HaMikdash on a Yom Tov, on Rosh Chodesh, or on Chanukah, on Purim, they don't tear Kriya. Any day that we don't say Tachanun, some people have the practice that they don't tear Kriya. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman said, maybe also on Tisha B'Av, if you go to the Makom HaMikdash, they have thousands of people coming to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Kotel on Tisha B'Av, said Rav Shlomo Zalman, somebody wanted to argue, maybe we shouldn't have to tear Kriya on Tisha B'Av because, after all, it's a Moed, just like you wouldn't tear Kriya on Chol HaMoed, so you shouldn't tear Kriya either on Tisha B'Av. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said he thinks that really is taking this a little too far. Yes, it's a Moed a little bit. There's some aspect of Moed, and therefore we don't say Tachanun, and therefore we don't say Tzidkascha. But to say that a person is not considered an Avelis at all, to say that a person should not tear Kriya because this is such a wonderful Yantiv, is such a celebratory day, he thought that was taking it a little too far. And therefore he said, number one, an Avel is allowed to daven on Tisha B'Av the same way he would daven any other day of the week. It's not considered to be a real Yantiv. And number two, he says, we would also say that somebody is obligated to tear Kriya if they would visit the Makam HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av because it doesn't really have the full status of a Moed like every other Yom Tov in our calendaric year. So the question obviously is, how could you call Tisha B'Av a Moed? How could you call it a Yom Tov? What exactly does that mean? On the one hand, this is the saddest day of the year. It's when we had both experiences of Churban Beis HaMikdash. We had so many terrible things throughout the generations, throughout the millennia. So that is the saddest part of the year. Now you're going to tell me it's also a Yom Tov. What exactly does that mean? So there are many suggestions given. The Shemi Shmuel quotes from his father, the great Avnei Nezer, who said that really the reason we should be happy is because Shafach HaMasal Eitzim Avanim, we deserve to be destroyed. And after all, God saved us. So there is something to celebrate. Yeah, we are sad about the fact that there was destruction. But after all, there was a lot that we should be happy about because God, after all, kept us alive. And God continued on to have our mission going, even though we don't really deserve it. So that is something to have a quasi Moed about. That's a reason not to say Tachanun, that's a reason not to say Tzidkascha, but otherwise, the Avnei Nezer, and this is what Shlomo Zalman wrote, this is not a reason to take it too far. There's a beautiful comment of the Chasam Sofer, where he has in his Drasha a little bit of a different interpretation as to why we consider Tisha B'Av to be some sort of a quasi-Moed, some sort of a quasi-Yom Tov. A beautiful insight to think about. He begins with what the Gemara says, Kalamis Abel al Yerushalayim, anyone who mourns properly for the loss of Yerushalayim, Zocha v'ra ben achamasa, you will have the merit, Zocha, right now, in the present, you will have the merit of seeing the Nachama. So he points out, number one, the real proper way to say that should have been, Yizke, if you now will mourn Yerushalayim properly, Yizke, in the future, you will see the Nachama of Yerushalayim when it is rebuilt. What does it mean, Zocha, that right now you're going to see the Nachama? What exactly does that mean? And this is what the Chasam Sofer is bothered with. He doesn't really understand, how can we say Zocha in the present? We don't have a Zchus right now to see Yerushalayim in the Nechama. You see it in the future when Mashiach will come and the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, then we will see it. So he suggests the following. He says, any normal person who doesn't have some sort of emotional condition, if they lose a loved one, if they lose a relative, yes, they will mourn, and they'll mourn some more, and they'll mourn maybe for Yud Beis Chodesh, or maybe for the first 2 years, the first 3 years, the first 5 years. They're going to have a very difficult time coping with the loss. But at a certain point, 10 years past, 20 years past, it's time to move on. Any regular human being knows we have to get on with life. We have to move on. We have to be able to put things in the back of our minds. And we're not going to sit and be sad about something forever. It just can't be. You're not going to be able to live life like that. So why is it, as the Chasam Sofer, that we continue? Why is it that we continue to mourn over the Beis HaMikdash? Now, here we are, thousands of years later. Beis HaMikdash has not been a part of any of our lives. So why are we mourning this? It's more exaggerated than any other period of mourning we would ever observe for anybody else, for people that we love so much. So why is it that we have such an exaggerated sense of mourning over the Churban Beis HaMikdash? And he writes the following. He suggests that from the mere fact that we are mourning the Beis HaMikdash so many thousands of years later means that the Beis HaMikdash is really alive. Because if the Beis HaMikdash was something that was dead thousands of years ago, if it was something that was out of our lives, out of the picture, something we didn't think about, something that we moved on without, we wouldn't mourn. We wouldn't have any feeling for it. It wouldn't be something that we would be drawn to. And therefore he says, from the mere fact that we're willing to sit down every year on Tisha B'Av, every year during the 9 days, and observe a commemoration in memory of the Holocaust, so to speak, in memory of the Beis HaMikdash, it means that the Beis HaMikdash is alive and kicking inside of us, and it's something that we feel we really have a connection to. That's why he writes, Zocha v'ra, right now is the Nechama. Right now when I'm sitting down on Tisha B'Av and I'm mourning the fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, that is the Nechama because it means the Beis HaMikdash is something that's meaningful to me. It means that it's something that's really alive for me. If it was something that was meaningless, if it was something that was totally out of picture, out of mind, out of sight, I wouldn't have the opportunity, I wouldn't have any reason to go and mourn so many thousands of years later, but from the mere fact, says the Chasam Sofer, that we're willing to go ahead and mourn this so many years after its destruction means that it's something that has extreme relevance to all of us. And that's what he writes as well Yaakov Avinu v'ayimayin lehisnachem. Why does Yaakov Avinu refuse to be comforted over the fact that he lost his son Yosef? Because Yosef wasn't dead. Yosef was alive. Yaakov felt something inside, like, my son is still here. I'm not going to be consoled over that. It's something that's still a part of me. It's something that I'm not giving up on. And Sotu says the Chasam Sofer, because the Beis Hamikdash is something that's a real part of our existence, it's a real part of something that we feel, and it's something that we really want to connect to, that is the Nechama itself. It's not that in the future we're going to have the Nechama when it's rebuilt, it's that right now as we mourn it, we're having the Nechama as we do that very act of mourning itself, because it means that it has relevance, it means it's still alive, it means va'imayin l'isnachem, that we're not willing to give up on the fact that we will have that utopian society with the Beis Hamikdash. Let's just close with one insight out of the Chafetz Chaim. It's a beautiful insight, and especially in our times when we live in such difficult times, and every day, every week, you hear about such terrible tragedies, so many horrible things, so many tzaras people go through, and in Eretz Yisrael, forget about it, what's going on there, but especially over here as well, we have so many horrible things that we hear about in all of our communities, and we think sometimes to ourselves, how is it possible? How could it be? This is the Zman of the Geula, this is really going to be what ushers in the Mashiach when we're having so many tzaras. Really, is this what God wants to do to us before we have the ultimate redemption? So the Chafetz Chaim gives a beautiful insight to understand what it could be, what could be the meaning of all this tragedy and all suffering that we see all over the world before we have the experience of Mashiach. And he writes the following. He says that people will ask themselves, Ma asa Elokim ba'aretz, what is God doing in the world? What is he making people suffer like this? How can we handle any longer all of the poverty? How can we handle all of the tsaras, all of the tragedy, all of the terrible suffering that people are going through? Where is God and what is he doing? What does he want from us? Says the Chafetz Chaim, Achein hamizbonin heitev, someone who thinks carefully about it, he writes, Yimtza mizeh gufa tanchumin tzas. If you think about it carefully, if you think critically, Chafetz Chaim warns us that you will have an understanding a little bit and you will see that in that itself lays the Tanchum and lays the Nechama. Why? Ki hine yodua mashakasav agra, he quotes from the Vilna Gaon, that all the days of our galus are domim leheirayon. They are similar to a pregnancy, which means, v'hasov dome lechevli leida, the very end of the pregnancy is the most difficult part. That's the most painful. And when he says, v'zel mashakar begemara chevli mashiach, this is why we call it chevli mashiach, just like chevli leida. A woman is in pain when she's giving birth, so too when Mashiach is on his way, when we're on the precipice of having that redemption, all of a sudden we feel a lot of pain. It's the birthing pains that the woman goes through. And he writes the following, Bechevle leidei adua, we know that when a person is on the birthing stool, when she's actually giving birth, in this dame isha mekash leidei, if you're having a woman that is in so much pain, uva eis hakishin is gaber alea harbe, ad she'ein b'kol chalispol, she starts to scream and she says, I just can't handle it anymore. What is the greatest nechama you can give her? Yes, it's painful. Of course, it's terribly painful. We can't even understand how much pain you're going through, but at the same time, think about just in another 5 minutes, you're going to have a child. You're going to forget about all this pain because it's not going, as much pain as you're in, it means that you're almost at the end. Because if you weren't in so much pain, it would mean you still have a long way to go. And therefore, says the Chafetz Chaim, it's the same thing over here. Kol zman shelon es gabru kol kach rov hametzukos. If we were living at a time when it wasn't so painful. So yes, in the third month of pregnancy, it's uncomfortable, but it's not so painful. Fourth, fifth, it gets a little more. So he says, if we were only at the third or fourth, fifth months of pregnancy, we wouldn't be feeling as much pain, as much suffering. But because, he says, we're at the time when the mitzukos nizgabru kolkach, when the pain is bubbling over in such an exaggerated way, efshar lizbal o, that we can't even handle it anymore, it means that God is sending us the tanchumen in that terrible suffering itself. And he's telling us that it's impossible that this can continue. It means that it's almost over. It means that you're on the birthing stool. It means that you're on the precipice of the redemption, because otherwise I would never be able to make you go through this. I would never be able to make you endure so much more suffering if it wasn't the promise that right after that would come the ultimate redemption. That we should also Nachamas Yerushalayim, Nachamas Tzion Yerushalayim, and maybe this year we won't even have to commemorate this terrible loss, this terrible Churban Beis Hamikdash that we go through every year. But as the Chafetz Chaim promises us, he says that obviously when we have the Chevli Mashiach, when we have the difficult, all the suffering, all the tragedy that we endure, that we see our communities enduring, it means that obviously the Chevli Mashiach are on their way, and it means that it's something we can look forward to, that the Ribbono Shel Olam will come through with his promise as well, and make sure that the Heirayon, that the pregnancy comes to an end in the near future.